Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining me today, Beyond the Divide. I want to talk a little bit about the greatest commandment that's ever been given. I want you guys to imagine the last time that someone went out of their way for you, not because they had to or because they'd get credit for it, but simply just because they saw you. That, my friends, is love in motion. And today we are going to dive into the greatest commandment ever given. So stay with me. We'll be right back.
Rise above, we're breaking through. No more lies, just me and you. Hearts aligned, we'll find the way. Together, we'll seize the day. Beyond the divide, we'll stand as one, chasing truth. From the shadows to the light, we strive. United, we thrive. Beyond the divide.
All right, guys, what is the greatest commandment? We know from the scriptures that that is love, as love for each other, love for Jesus Christ, love for our faith. And today I want to unpack the two verses that Jesus himself called the greatest in all of the law. We're going to walk with the Samaritan. We're going to stand in a Nazi prison. And we're going to ask ourselves, what does love cost me today? So let's start with Deuteronomy chapter 6, 5. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. And Leviticus chapter 19, love your neighbor as yourself. Then we have a first century TED Talk skeptic lawyer asks Jesus in Mark 12, Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus doesn't pick one, he fuses them together. And he says, Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Every prophet, every sacrifice, every psalm hangs on love, not sentiment or emoji hearts, love as a verb, love as sacrifice. So let's think back to the Samaritan. Let me set the scene for you. A Jewish man is mugged, he's beaten, he's left lying on the Jericho road, 17 miles of pure bandit paradise. Priest walks by, he sees him, he crosses the road. A Levite, temple worker, does the same. Both have religious reasons why they can't approach the man. Then comes a Samaritan, and Samaritans were despised by the Jews. They were a mixed race, they worshipped incorrectly. There was centuries of bad blood between the two, and if anyone had an excuse to keep walking, it was definitely him. But verse 33 tells us when he saw him, he had compassion. He bandages wounds with his own wine and oil. He loads the man on his donkey, pays 2 denarii, which is 2 days' wages at an inn for him to be taken care of, and tells the innkeeper that if she goes over that amount, he will make up the rest when he comes back. And Jesus ends this parable with a gut punch. Which of these was a true neighbor to the man? The lawyer can't even say Samaritan without spitting it out of his mouth. Jesus admonishes us to be like the Samaritan. Go and do likewise. The Samaritan didn't ask, If the man deserved his help or his love, he asked, what does love require now, in this moment? Fast forward 2,000 years, April 9th, 1945, at the Flossenbürg concentration camp, a 39-year-old Lutheran pastor is stripped and led to the gallows. His crime was plotting to kill Hitler. So here I give you the unfinished symphony of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. In the crisp February air of 1906, beneath the spires of Breslau's ancient churches, a boy entered the world not with a cry, but with the quiet intensity of one already pondering the divine. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, sixth of eight children to Karl, the eminent psychiatrist whose mind dissected the shadows of the soul, and Paula, a woman whose university diploma was as rare as her fierce devotion to scripture. Their home, soon transplanted to Berlin's Grunewald suburb, hummed with the symphony of intellect, violins from young Dietrich's fingers, debates echoing like chamber music, and the faint undercurrent of a Europe teetering on the brink. By 14, in the shadow of the Great War's thunder, Dietrich knelt in his room, whispering vows to a god he felt more in the gut wrench of loss than in the stained glass glow. His brother Walter fell on the Western Front in 1918, a bullet sealing the eldest Bonhoeffer before he could claim his violin solo. Who am I if not for others? Young Dietrich scrawled in a journal, the ink bleeding like unspoken grief. Theology called him next, not as a safe harbor, but a storm-tossed sea. In Berlin, degrees piled like sandbags against the rising tide of doubt. Who is Christ for us today? A question gnawed at him, a melody unresolved. Barcelona in 1928 offered sun-drenched respite, a German congregation amid the flamenco rhythms. But it was New York in 1930 that shattered his Teutonic reserve. Harlem's Abyssinian Baptist Church, where the spirit descended not in whispers but in joyous roars, tambourines clashing, voices rising like a tide against oppression. I have scarcely ever heard God called upon with such firmness, transparency, and piety, he wrote to his parents. The words trembling on the page. Amid jazz-soaked streets and the pulse of Black resilience, Dietrich glimpsed a faith unbound by cathedrals, a love that crossed the color-barred roads of Jericho. He returned to Berlin in 1931, lectured at the university, youth pastor in the gritty wedding district, his sermons sharp as a scalpel. Cheap grace is the deadly enemy of our church. Then came the shadow. January 30th, 1933, Adolf Hitler, that snarling demagogue with eyes like coals, seized the chancellery. The air thickened with swastikas, the streets echoing with hells that mocked the heavens. Dietrich, barely 27, watched his nation's soul fracture. The German Christians, those bootlicking theologians, fused cross and swastika, demanding an Aryan paragraph to purge Jewish blood from pulpits. Bonhoeffer's voice cracked like thunder in April. Church must not only ask whether the will of God is done, but also bear witness to it. His essay, The Church for the World, wasn't ink on paper. It was a gauntlet flung at the Führer's feet. Silence in the face of evil? No. The church must act, he thundered, even if it meant the destruction of the state apparatus. Exile beckoned in 1933, a pastorate in St. London's John's, where fog shrouded, the Thames whispered of safer shores. But Dietrich's heart tugged back at the fray. He smuggled sermons to the confessing church, that ragtag rebellion of pastors defying the Reich's puppet bishops. We will not be a state church, they vowed at Bauman in 1934, their declaration a barricade of words. Back in Germany by 1935, Bonhoeffer had forged his underground seminary, a pine-scented haven where 27 young men learned not theology's abstractions, but costly grace and faith that bleeds. mornings of silent prayer and evenings of communal toil, lectures by candlelight, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. The Gestapo's eyes narrowed. Raids scattered the flock, but the seeds took root. Love for Dietrich wore a Jewish face. In 1938, as Kristallnacht's flames licked synagogues, he and his sister Sabine, his twin in spirit, bound by invisible threads, whisked their mother from Berlin's peril. But it was the Jews beyond family who hunted him. Though brother-in-law Hans von Donje, a legal lion in the Aberwurst den, Dietrich funneled funds, forged passports, carved escape routes for the hunted. "We are not to simply bandage wounds," he confided, "but to root out the evil that causes them." The Abwehr, the nest of military intelligence riddled with resistors, Admiral Kernes at the helm, General Oster plotting in whispers, became Dietrich's cloak. Double agent, they called him, spy for the Reich, saboteur for the soul. By 1939, love demanded a deeper vow. Maria von Wedemeyer, 18 to his 33, entered his world like a sonnet amid sonatas. Their engagement, sealed in secret amid air raid sirens, was no fairy tale, but a covenant forged in fire. "I want to be worthy of you," he wrote from America, his reluctant 1939 lecture tour cut short by war's howl. "I have made a mistake in coming to this country," he confessed, fleeing the safe harbor of Union Seminary's halls back to the Inferno, now the Abwehr's asset. Dietrich crisscrossed borders, neutral Sweden for economical whispers, Geneva for plots veiled in prayer. Bombs fell on Berlin. His parents' home shuddered, but his letters to Maria bloomed defiant sonnets of longing, theology in verse. "By powers of good, all powers of evil are restrained," he penned in 1942, a fragile hymn against the night. The net tightened in 1943. The Gestapo boots on Tegel's cold stone, arrested on flimsy pretexts, but the real crime lurked in shadows. Links to the Valkyrie plot, that desperate bid to shatter the serpent's head. Prison became his pulpit. In Tegel's gray cell, Dietrich wrote Fiction as Rebellion, a novel fragment where Nazi caricatures dance grotesque, autobiography bleeding into allegory. To Bethelge, there is a good deal of autobiography mixed in, letters smuggled out, letters and papers from prison, wrestled with a religious Christianity, a faith stripped bare for the outcast's view in the view from below. From the maltreated, the powerless, daylight raids shook the walls. He sketched the bombed skylines, prayed for Maria, whose visits were lifelines across the barbed wire. In October 1944, the noose drew taut. Brother Klaus, brother-in-law, was dragged to the gallows. Escape plans crumbled in fear of reprisals. February 1945, Buchenwald's maw, then Flossenbürg's frozenness. In the SS cells, Dietrich ministered still, a makeshift Eucharist for fellow prisoners, his voice steady as a Vesper bell. Bonhoeffer was the most cheerful man in the room, a British officer later marveled, witnessing the pastor-led worship on the eve of doom. Dawn, April 9th, 1945, stripped bare under a Bavarian sky, bruised with spring's false promise, Dietrich knelt in the Flossenbürg yard. The gallows loomed, a crude scaffold for the Reich's justice. No trial, just a drumhead verdict. Hitler's fury unleashed after Valkyrie's failure. He whispered a prayer, eyes lifting to the heavens where his unfinished symphony lingered. Violins of resistance, cellos of costly love. The trap door yawned. At 6 a.m., the snap echoed, but his spirit did not break. 39 years, a life woven of grace and grit, ended not in silence, but in the roar of faith and love that refused the cheap. In the days that followed, as Allied tanks rumbled toward liberation, a guard murmured to the survivors, He was one of the bravest men I ever knew. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, theologian, resister, lover of God and man, his end, the beginning of life. A testament etched in blood, to love is to act, even when the shadows swallow the light. And in the quiet after, the world hummed on, forever changed by the man who bid us come and die, so that others might truly live. Bonhoeffer loved his enemies enough to risk everything to stop their evil. That is the Samaritan on the Jericho Road 2,000 years later. So what does this look like for us in the now? Okay, first we need to see other people. The Samaritan saw the man. Slow down. Notice the friend who's been quiet this week, the kid who's melting down in Target, the mom of the kid who's melting down in Target. Cross that road. The Samaritan crossed ethnic, religious, and economic lines. Who is the Samaritan in your life? Who is your political opposite? Who is a, you know, friend who has offended? Who is that for you? Love always crosses the road. And love costs. It costs time, it costs money, sometimes it costs reputation. Bonhoeffer paid with his life. We may have to pay with a Friday night, a tank of gas, maybe a canceled plan or two. So this week, I want you to do one act of costly love. Text someone, tell them simply, I'm bringing dinner, no reply needed. Call that relative that you've avoided for years for whatever reason. Get it figured out. Jesus is coming back, guys. He's coming quickly. We don't have a lot of time to get this stuff figured out anymore. Don't waste the time that we've been given. God sent his son to cross the road for us. Pray that he will give us eyes to see, feet to cross, and hearts to pay. Pray that he will make you a Samaritan in a divided world. And pay attention. Remember, God doesn't just put stuff in our lives. He kind of hides it in little opportunities. So pay attention and look for those little opportunities. And then do the work. Take advantage of the opportunities that are given to you in your life. Build the kingdom. Share the good news. Let everybody know Jesus is on his way. Share that Christ-like attribute that you have been given. Unpack it and dust it off. Show it to the world. Take your talents. Share them with everyone. Don't hide them. Have a wonderful evening, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about forgiving, even when it's hard. So I hope that you'll join me then, and thank you so much for joining me today.